Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
We got the Professor John Clayton with us. Jameis Winston expected to get a three-game suspension. I'd forgotten all about this case, John.
How did you Uber over that? That's terrible. It's because I forgot about it, too. And nobody was buying into the idea, particularly. I know Rick Stroud was tweeting this out. He's like, all this stuff is all fake news and all that as far as an 8-game suspension. And it's true. But now it looks like it's going to be a 3-game suspension in just an unusual thing where, what, he assaulted an Uber driver?
Yes. And if I remember correctly, I'm not sure if he was cited at the time, but there were reports that he had inappropriately touched the Uber driver, and obviously the NFL believes that something must have happened.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is the rule of Roger Goodell, not the rule of law, and so you don't have to have a guilty charge or a guilty conviction or anything like that. If you have the charge, they make a judgment based on their own determinations. You know, they did it with Ezekiel Elliott. Remember Ben Roethlisberger a few years ago had some assault charges against women, and there was never any full case, but they took the 4-game suspension. And so that's just the way it goes in this league. And that's a big blow to Tampa Bay. I mean, you can't concede any ground in the NFC anyways because of how deep the quarterback position is. And you're in the deepest division as far as quarterbacks because each team has a very good quarterback. You know, you've got Cam Newton. You've got Drew Brees. I mean, you've got guys that are really, really good. And now if you have to concede a game or two because you lose your quarterback, you're in trouble.
I was bothered by the suspension to Ezekiel Elliott. And I was bothered from the standpoint that it was the NFL sort of positioning itself as that it knew more than the criminal investigators into a case that ultimately Ezekiel Elliott wasn't charged with.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
With Jameis Winston, I look at it and I was like, man, any benefit of the doubt that you would give him, I think he's long since lost considering previous indiscretions he's had where he was investigated on an allegation of rape when he was in college.
Yeah.
He also had something where he yelled something incredibly inappropriate and profane on campus while that sort of investigation, while that was still kind of hanging over his head. And I don't know
stole
if there's
the shrimp.
Yeah, he stole the shrimp. Like, there's increasing evidence that, I guess I can see that idea that, hey, you've lost the benefit of the doubt to where we're going to take your word for anything.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. I don't know. I tend to lean a little bit more lenient on him because you look at a lot of the stuff in college. And again, the one with the allegation with the woman, that one I thought, because it looked like it was more of a cover-up than anything else. When I say cover-up, I mean it seemed like he had the court in his favor because he was a player. And if that's the case, that that follows the fortunate thing that's happening in this country with the Me Too, that you can't cover these things up and you can't cover for somebody. If they did it, let the case come out. But it seemed like he got a favorable court treatment in that, a favorable police treatment in that. So that was, I think, concerning. I mean, certainly the comment that he made, you know, in the lunchroom and that was horrible. And the what you wonder about is on the restaurant, I mean, not the restaurant thing, but the market thing where he goes in and gets the shrimp. I mean, there may have been something pre-set up by that and somebody knew was at the counter, but of course that goes into taking care of a player. But since he's been in the league, I think he's been fine except for this.
Yeah, and switching from Winston to Goodell, Roger Goodell, I mean, he's at the behest of the owners, right?
That's
we always forget this part. And you know, I don't agree with him, you know, sort of taking over as the judge in these situations. But look, they want that, right? I mean, it's and so that's what you get from him. Yeah, how do you feel about Roger Goodell? How many more years, John? What do you think his tenure in the NFL is, and what do you think he's going to look back on his career as?
I can't remember the years of extension that he signed, but isn't it like to 2024 or 2023? Mm-hmm. And this is going to be his last contract. But I think you can see the way it's going to shape up. And I think this was wise for them to do, because you want the team that negotiated the last CBA to be the team that's going to negotiate the next CBA. That's so important. And then you have now a year or two then to get the next commissioner and get him set up once the CBA is done. And so I think that's why. What's it going to be remembered for? What they hope to do by 2027, I think it is, get to $25 billion for revenue. That's what they want, and that's what they'll probably end up getting. So that's what the plan is. But next thing is, he does take criticism. He certainly is going to, do things that's not going to please the union. That's never going to be the case, and that's going to lead to a very nasty negotiation come 2020-2021 when they try to do a new CBA.
How about leadership with the union, John? How has that been rated, and how what's your opinion on it?
Well, I mean, it probably doesn't get good ratings because, I mean, so many things have slipped through the cracks in this deal. Again, I think what they've done for benefits has been fantastic. I mean, they really got a great benefits package. That's good. I mean, they put, $10 million a year or something like that in benefits, and that's good, and they have a good percentage of that. Where you can see the cracks, though, is that there's no middle class in the NFL because, they got kind of beat out on that one. To take the jump from like 59% of the gross to 47%, what they should have done is not – I mean, this is one that was a big bugaboo for me, and I think it would be for you. The way the guarantees are done in this sport is so different than anything else. For example, if you're going to get a multi-year guarantee, you have to fund it almost immediately or make sure that you have it fully funded by February of the second year of the contract. And the fact that they didn't get that negotiated away, now has prevented and really shortened the guarantees on contracts. Where back when you were playing, I mean, you would have guys that would get the third year guaranteed or some guarantees into the third year. Now, what has come out of this by not eliminating the funding, which of course, I mean, it's a $14 billion business. Do you really need to put the cash in the bank and make sure that it's not going to default on it? I mean, that's the only reason that they had that in there, and that is so outdated. It's ridiculous. I mean, everybody is making money in this league. Nobody's losing any money. And so to have that is just an out-of-touch, out-of-crazy thing. Well, they didn't get that eliminated, so now what happens, you get one of two things. I mean, you get maybe four or five players a year that'll get guarantees into the third year, or you'll get a deal where you'll get the second year guaranteed, or now what a lot of teams are doing, Seattle's done it, is that they'll guarantee it at the beginning of the second year, but you don't have to worry about the extra funding. I mean, you can kind of go year to year and not take too much out of the bank this year to do it. So they should have gotten that, and that would have led to better guaranteed contracts for the players.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, John. I just want to clear up something, a housekeeping note here, because there's a lot of outrage from the texters.
Uh-oh.
It wasn't shrimp. It was crab.
Crab, okay.
Crab legs specifically.
Yeah. Get your facts straight.
Crab legs. Wrong crustacean entirely.
So we got that cleared.
Over to you, Jim.
Okay. All right, John, it just occurred to me, I'm not sure why, but do you think by the year 2025 that we will have NFL franchises in London and Mexico City?
Very possible. I mean, I know that's what the league wants to do. I don't think the owners necessarily want to do it. I hope it doesn't happen. And it's not like I'm trying to hold back on international stuff. But again, it opens up so much more revenue because, I mean, you look at the revenue in some of the sports in Europe and across the seas. I mean, it's massive. I mean, because I know even you see some comparisons as far as sponsorships. As good as the league is for sponsorships, it's so much better overseas. And so you want to tap into it. So in the end, something's going to happen to probably get something in London, maybe something in Mexico City. I don't see it expanding. I mean, again, they're not going to consider anything until they get this CBA done. And, of course, the one thing that they have to worry about is there's going to be a major change probably in the funding by televisions, because now you're going through the transition where, less people are going to be watching on TV. More people are going to be watching streaming, or they're going to be watching on their iPhones, or they're going to be watching on their computers. And so you have to make sure that there's not going to be a big revenue dip for that. I mean, you know that, for example, it's going to be hard for the NFL to anticipate. They're going to get double the money from ESPN for Monday night games when you're seeing so much less on cable. Because, again, one of the reasons they were able to get double is that they can charge the $8 extra to go to be on all like DirecTV and all the cable outlets, $8 per home. And that's probably going to vanish because, again, now so many people have left the cable industry. So, there's going to be some transition there. And so until that's resolved, I can't see anything happening unless, say, Jacksonville just picks up and move. And Jacksonville is very comfortable right now in Jacksonville with the Jaguars. So I don't see anything happening before, say, 2024.
I feel like this is one of those things that I have heard about for 20 years covering sports, is that eventual expansion to Europe, either with the NBA, which I actually think would make more sense because there is an actual appetite for basketball in Europe, and American football now with this, oh, we think it's going to be over there. And I don't doubt what you're saying, John, because I think a lot of owners look at it that way and want and think that it's a great way to grow it. There, in my mind, is zero evidence that people in Europe want American football and would become interested in it in any way. For the life of me, set aside the logistical difficulties, which I think would be a nightmare. Like, there's the audience for American football over in Europe is Americans that are living abroad, and I don't think that can sustain a league where it would stretch to begin with. Do you think it's a good idea?
No, I'm not big on it at all. See, and also from even the competitive standpoint of it, because 32 works. Mm-hmm. Because now you have the same balance of divisions. I mean, yeah, the divisions may be different as far as the quality of the teams, but you have four teams in eight divisions. That works so well. It works for scheduling. It works for continuity. If you add two, then it just kind of throws everything off. And you can see, it's, even though it's been slow, that at some point baseball will get to 32. You probably think at some point the NBA gets to 32. And so I think there's such a good balance when you do that. And from the competitive standpoint, it takes away. And so that's why it's probably one where you have to have a team move. And, clearly Jacksonville is the one team that might consider it. But I still think that they're comfortable enough there. But I would rather, see everything here because, we're not even talking about the logistical problems, the problems of travel, the problems of drain and all that stuff. I mean, when you go overseas, I mean, you now are going to have teams that are going to give an advantage to the teams that are over in London, and that won't be Mexico City. That's not a problem there. But if you go to London, there's going to be a drain because of the travel.
The other thing, and this is a weird problem, the NBA had it in Canada. Players didn't want to go play up there. Like, I remember Steve Francis being absolutely bummed that he got drafted by Vancouver. Vancouver's an awesome city, and I think he was crazy to feel that way. Vince Carter wanted out of Toronto. It's a logistic. You would have a hard time attracting free agents, all of those things. Could you imagine, Dave?
It's a very good point. Yeah, attracting free agents, especially. I mean, obviously, you get drafted, but.
Now, me, if I was a free agent, I would love to go there, get proper wet shave each day.
That was fun going to Grizzlies games up there.
It's a great city. Yeah, but you remember Steve Francis? It looked like he was going to cry when the Grizzlies drafted him.
I remember Big Country up there, too. You remember him out of Oklahoma State?
I do remember.
I forget his name, though.
Bryant Reeves.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of Canada, John, in Canadian football, there was a streaker. That was a Canadian version of a streaker. He had underwear and shorts on.
Yeah.
But the player on, is it the Alouettes? It looked like a cornerback. He took the streaker out. Now the streaker is suing him.
Yeah, isn't that beautiful?
Well, let me ask you, do you think that that guy should be allowed to sue?
No,
because
I don't know where it stands as far as law, but he's committing somewhat of a criminal act. I mean, he's imposing his body and imposing his will on the game and disrupting the game. I mean, it's certainly that's one where, if you're making an illegal act, and again, you can judge the severity of the illegal act, but it's still an illegal act. And, should you then get some financial benefit from assault? I mean, I don't think so. I think in that case, he should not be in court. I think the judge should immediately say, well, you did this. You can't make yourself in a position to get money out of it.
Yeah, I wonder if his complaint would be that the play wasn't going on, that the whistle had been blown.
Somebody was like, oh, I can totally see why he hired an attorney because the guy had a helmet on. I was like, oh, well, you know how he could have avoided getting hit by a guy with a helmet? Not run on the playing field.
Yeah, that would have been a good idea.
Keep your pants on. And that brings me to Mike Curtis, John. You remember that one when some drunk guy ran on the field in Baltimore, and mm-hmm. Mike Curtis, mm-hmm. the linebacker, went over and just tattooed him?
Yeah.
Dislodged
I think
him
the only thing that's bad about the CFL one, it wasn't a linebacker. I mean, linebacker is the one should enforce the rules. I mean, don't you agree with that?
Yeah.
And particularly a guy like Mike Curtis. I mean, when you hear it's like, if there was a player in football who's not named Butkus that should be enforcing the hitting of a streaker on the field, I mean, it would be Mike Curtis.
Yeah,
no-nonsense middle linebacker.
If you go back and look at he reminds me, well, Greg Gaines, I would say, reminds me of him or vice versa, but Mike Curtis was the better player. But if you go back and watch him play, John, he was trying to punish people. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would always bring like a fist in, and he was a Seahawk there for a little while. What are your memories of his career?
He was good. I mean, what you like is that he was that prototypical middle linebacker. I mean, you know, just stand there in the middle and then figure out how to get over and make the tackle. I mean, he was fierce. He was a good leader. I mean, he had that presence. I mean, the one difference with Keith was Keith was more, maybe a little taller and a little more angular. But what you looked at with Curtis, I mean, he was just that perfect. I mean, well, I don't know, but 6'1", 255 pounds, or 6', 255, low to the ground, the way he had the knee bend and everything else. I mean, he just had that great look. You know, Keith was a little bit taller, if I remember correctly, and I'm just going off memory.
Keith Butler, yeah.
Yeah, and Keith Butler is like just off of memory than I am anything else. But, he was just, because again, it was the stance. When you're a middle linebacker from that age, it's different now, but if you're a middle linebacker from that age, it was the stance that seemed to be not imposing to the opposing teams, but just imposing if you're watching and you're saying, ooh, this guy's going to tackle the guy on my team? Wow.
Hey, John, what do you think about Mike Riley? He was supposed to be the associate head coach at Oregon State under Jonathan Smith, and now he's going to the Alliance of American Football. He's going to be the head coach in San Antonio. The general manager is Moose Johnston. You think this league has a chance?
I do. I really do. I mean, I like the way it's going, and I think that you can see that the more and more it's set up, the better it's going to be. They got Bill Kuharik. It's, I think, pretty much kind of the main guy in charge of the personnel from the league office. I know there's other people. I don't want to name any because if they haven't announced it yet. But I know that it's just good people, and it's all NFL people. And so, they're paying $750,000 for the coach. They're paying $250,000 for the general manager. I think you can see that they have a plan, and they thought through this so well that, you start it up right after the Super Bowl. You go for 3 months. You provide enough time for all those players to be able to put themselves in a position to get contracts before OTAs and the offseason program starts. I think it's beautiful. I think this is a developmental league that's been needed since NFL Europe is gone.
Who is the target player for this? Is it guys that are on rosters but not getting playing time? Is it guys that went undrafted? Or is it guys that for whatever reason don't pan out in college football?
Basically, it's going to be the guys that are going to be like 64 through 90 on a roster. And the better it gets, the better players are going to be able to go. Because what you might get, I mean, is some of the practice squad guys that, if you take a tack. And my guess is what you're probably going to see is they're going to have team alignments. I mean, you've got 8 teams in this league. And that means that you can have 4 teams working in the NFL with one of these 8 teams. And so just like you had with NFL Europe, it may not be you would take a guy that's under contract, but you can say maybe the Los Angeles team or whatever the team is going to be where they're going to be placed. That would get Seattle, the Rams, San Francisco, and a few others, and they're all worked together. And so, because again, you realize it's not taking away anything from the NFL because it's not taking away from the offseason program. There's no offseason program at that time. It's giving players a chance to play. So I think what you're taking is you're taking the third quarterback of the practice squad quarterback. I mean, you're taking the 10th offensive lineman. You're basically taking the guys who are going to be the next guys that you'll want on your roster when you get to 90. And then you realize once that season is over, you get those players.
Yeah, and Daryl Johnson, one of the better guys in the NFL. And was he broadcasting last year?
Yes.
Okay, so
the beauty of this
he can still do it?
No, he can still do it.
Huh.
I mean, I don't think that determination has been made, but he can still do it just because, it doesn't interfere with anything. There's no games in the NFL that he could broadcast between the day after the Super Bowl and when this season ends.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if maybe there's other things that he's going to have to attend to, but hopefully not, because he does a great job.
He really does.
Hey, Professor, I'm looking at odds, Super Bowl odds, and what struck me, okay, the Patriots are 6.5 to 1 and the Eagles are 9 to 1. The Seahawks are 50 to 1, John, at this list that I'm looking at. They're 50 to 1. There are 19 teams with lower odds than the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. Can you believe it?
Yeah. I mean, how many teams?
19.
19, that's too low. I mean, you know, but honestly, I guess maybe there's a validity to it, but that's still too low because, I mean, you know, the team, you have it in front of you? Just give me like the four teams ahead of Seattle.
I don't have it in front of me, but the team that's right in front of them really surprised me. It's the Giants.
Yeah, that's
Giants are 47 to 1.
Yeah, so I think they're just being too critical because, I mean, this team I still think can be a playoff team. And so do I think it's a Super Bowl team? Not this year. I can see them because it's almost like 2012 as far as making the playoffs. I mean, maybe they can win one game on the road, and then the next game they're going to be in trouble because they're going against, you know, some division winner that's going to be a higher seed. But I still think this team can make the playoffs because I think it will be able to run the ball. It'll have a decent, not great, but a decent defense, and they got a great quarterback.
Hey, Jim, I'm going to pass down a couple bucks. Can you put me down for that?
Oh, you want the Seahawks at 50 to 1?
50 to 1. Yeah,
I'll see what I can do, Dave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good money there.
Yeah, $2 just changed hands. Professor, we always appreciate
you. Give me those odds, John, Jim?
Sure, Dave. Okay. I will do that.
John, who's on the podcast this week?
We got a good one. We got Phil Steele. The Phil Steele college football preview is the absolute best. I mean, there's nothing on the market in any sport that's better than that. And what we were able to do is go through all the analytical things he's been able to develop. And what's so fun is that talking to him, of course, you know, we're doing this all at the same time. I mean, he was creating this stuff 24 years ago when really there wasn't much on the computer horizon that you can use. I mean, so much of the stuff he did by hand, now he does it in computers. And you can see that, you know, a lot of the formulas that he used for college football are the things that you can use in the NFL. And you'll be surprised to see what team he has in the top four that should be in the college playoffs. And if you're guessing, it's University of Washington.
I'm excited to see what's going to happen. Phil was the one that projected it. One of the first people I saw to project it a couple of years ago when they did end up making it. John, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up next, we have the only Washington Husky that Jim Moore loves.
I do. I like Jake Locker too, but this guy is number one in my book.
He joins us next.
This is Danny Dave and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Our guest has a number of incredible honors. He was the star of a song, The Ballad of Sonny Six Killer. He was also one of the all-time great quarterbacks at the University of Washington. He was inducted into the Pac-12 Hall of Fame just this year, but perhaps the greatest honor is that Sonny Six Killer is such a great Husky that even Jim Moore, the Super Coug, loves Sonny Six Killer.
I love Sonny Six Killer. I do. You're right about that, because when I was in junior high, I was going to games with my mom. We sat in Section 7, and boy, it was so much fun watching Sonny Six Killer and the Huskies back then, and yeah, he's my all-time favorite, and I've told him as much.
Well, Sonny, that must warm your heart to hear that the most dour Coug that there is, he loves you.
Well, you know, I've talked to Jim many times, and you know what? He, outside of Jack Thompson, might be my favorite Coug.
Oh, don't say that.
No, I love you, Sonny. I mean, it was so much fun back then. Yeah, the Throne Simone, I love him too. But no, Sonny,
I know.
Back in the day, you know, the guy I really disliked, though, was Jim Plunkett. I didn't like Jim Plunkett at all because Stanford, and they were the Indians back then, the Stanford Indians back then with Jim Plunkett, they were always right. Just a little bit better than the Huskies and Sonny Six Killer.
Well, don't go saying that.
That bothered me. Well. No, it bothered me. It did. Did it bother you? Did you not like Plunkett either?
Well, you know, I admire any quarterback that plays college ball that goes to Stanford. Jim Plunkett was great. He was 23, I think, when he finished. So, you know, he was an older guy. And, you know, they would leave him in. If they were up 50 to nothing, they'd leave Jim in to get the stats for the Heisman. I didn't like that.
He is.
Those no good Stanford guys.
Yeah. That's true.
But you know what? you got to give them some credit, right? They've been good over the years, and I enjoy it when we beat them, and I'm sure Wazoo enjoys that as well.
Well, we're talking to Sonny Sixkiller here on the Venue Kings Hotline, and Sonny, you've been named King Neptune, which is pretty darn awesome. You're the king.
I know. Me and Hugh McElhaney, I guess, from Husky days, but no, it's kind of, I had to think about it, guys, you know, because it's got big honor. It's a big commitment. But I thought, you know, what the heck? I love Seafair. I always have, ever since I was a student at the UW, and always had a lot of fun with it. My family, we still go out on it. I love the races. Hey, I don't know if you knew that, but I used to work for Atlas Van Lines in corporate sales here locally, and I got to be friends with Bill Muncy.
That's awesome. He's the all-time winningest hydro driver. He won more hydro races.
I still remember sitting in the pits in his trailer between races and just talking to him. And he was a very interesting, to me, he was a nice guy, very outgoing, very interesting. But I'll never forget those moments. You know, that was tragically, he passed away in a wreck in Mexico. But I enjoyed those moments. It was great. Great history.
Yeah, and you know, Sonny, being a California guy, I remember I had friends from Seattle that were talking about Seafair, what a big deal it is. And so as King Neptune, what are some of the responsibilities and sort of appearances that you have?
Well, you know, there's a lot of set things you got to go to, which I'm looking forward to, is, you know, welcoming the Pirates at Alki. Uh-huh. You know, now, of course, they have the Milk Carton Derby and Pride Parade. I hope to make it to that on Sunday. And then, the, you know, of course, being around the Blue Angels pilot, being on a Navy ship, you know, Seafair itself, but also the Torchlight Parade. Being there, you know, that's going to be, I'm looking most forward to all of it, really, because it's part of Seattle. And, you know, if I can be a part of it, then I'm going to have fun with it.
Well, and Sonny, the hydros were a big part of my childhood. You know, I was one of those kids that would put get some plywood, put it together and have a hydro and have it on the back of your bike and ride along with it. And yet, and everything used to stop on Sunday afternoon when it was time for Seafair in August, and you watched, and you always watched the final heat, if nothing else. But what do you think can be done now to restore the interest in hydros? Because Seattle's gotten so big, and there's so many other things going on, but it sure is fun out there on a Sunday, but it seems like the interest has waned a bit.
You know, to me personally, I think when they went to the turbine engines, it kind of got cut away from the old rumbling down the lake, which I love. I love the loudness, the noise, and it was really unpredictable who was going to last through the race. And even I guess that's true today, too, with the turbine engines. But it seems to me that whole sport needs either more races, more money into it. I think at least Seattle, people have stepped up to be a part. Albert Lee, right, to help support Seafair and the hydroplane races. I think that's awesome because they're a Northwest company. And if we get more Northwest companies supporting the Northwest event, this is our summer fair, you know. So if they can get out and support that, I think it really would help the engagement.
Lots of stuff leading up to it. We have Seafair starts August 4th. Races conclude on August 6th, but the week before that, you have the Torchlight Parade. All sorts of stuff. It is our summer festival. Sonny, what do you think about the Huskies? A lot of excitement and anticipation, and what Chris Peterson's done. What's your impression of Washington football right now?
Well, you know, I think, well, obviously you guys are the experts, but I just think that the winning has changed his way of approaching who he recruits. He's not recruiting to Boise, Idaho, nothing against Boise, recruiting to that level of school. He's got the University of Washington, Seattle, Washington, beautiful stadium, 72,000 people. There's a lot to be positive when you recruit a young kid nowadays, and when he's recruiting to a winning program, with a winning culture within the program, that's to me, that's a win-win. And I think he's done a fantastic job, he and his staff, support staff, all the way through from the training to the weight training to you name it, they're all on the same page as far as the Husky culture. And I'm sure Alabama and all the big schools have that same kind of thing. And I think that kind of stands, that has made Chris Peterson and his staff, it's much easier to go recruit a four-star guy or a five-star guy. If I don't understand the ratings. Maybe Jim Moore does. But, you know, I don't know how they recruit the stars on these kids. But I think that's really elevated the program to an elitist status.
That's something that's never been said. Maybe Jim Moore knows. Come on, Sonny.
Hey, Jim, I'm trying to give you some props here. Come on, just roll with it.
Yeah, thank you, Sonny. I love you, Sonny.
Hey, Sonny, I want to ask about your days in the World Football League, and you've led such an interesting life. I saw that you went on a you tried out, or I guess you got a spot on Hawaii 5-0. You were in the longest yard, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, what was the World Football League back then? Because you played for the Hawaiians and then what, in Philadelphia?
Well, you know, I'll tell you real quickly, is I signed with the Rams out of college. I got cut by Mr. Chuck Knox.
Oh, really?
Yes. And then Burt Reynolds and I had been met in college, and when he knew I got cut, he was doing this movie, The Longest Yard, so he had Pat Studstill, who was acquiring all the talent, be in the movie, and that's how I got the call.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, I signed with Toronto, which was a good and a bad mistake. I hated that whole organization, and eventually the coach got fired, the general manager got fired, the owner moved the team to, I can't even remember where he moved him to. And so after that, I went to Philadelphia with the Philadelphia Bell in the World Football League, and I thought that was kind of it. I'm tired of dragging around. The next year, I get a call from the owners of the Hawaiians in Hawaii. They flew me over there, offered me a pretty good deal. I went, okay, this sounds good. Yeah. I guess I better start working out again. So I did, and I had a great time. Calvin Hill was on our team. We had all kinds of guys that were on Super Bowls and all-pro guys, and it was just a great, wonderful experience. It really was.
How about your Husky days, Sonny? I mean, those are the ones that most people will talk about and remember, and I still can remember getting my Sports Illustrated and how excited I was when I saw your picture there on the cover. And, I mean, it was so much fun, too, with Bill Cahill, Calvin Jones, whenever the other team had the punt, and then when you were throwing the ball around. What was your career like there at Washington?
You know, it was really good because we had a really good freshman group that came in that really hung tight. When we had our racial situation where the blacks boycotted our game at UCLA for the varsity game, and we were freshmen. And we just kind of bonded in the locker room and became a common goal of sticking together. It doesn't matter what those guys are doing. You know, we got to do our thing. And that's really what's carried us over to spring and the ensuing years. And the nucleus of that were a lot of the guys that I came in as freshmen with. So it was really rewarding, and still friends with almost all of them. It's great memories. You know, you guys, it's like anything. It's if you have some success, and I don't know if you guys remember, you're probably too young, but Seattle was crazy, crazy when I was playing. I mean, it was, you couldn't go to Dick's Drive-In without being mobbed at in your car. You couldn't go to a convenience store. It was a restaurant. Forget it. You couldn't eat. I was reminded when Jake Locker was getting all this hype. Nothing, I love Jake Locker, don't get me wrong. But I said, you know what? That's nothing compared to my sophomore year at the UW. Nothing. And it was, well, you know, come on. There was nothing really going on at the time. I mean, you know, Seahawks weren't here and,
Yeah, plus you were really, Sonny, you were really good.
Well, you know, for a little kid from Ashland, Oregon, I think I did okay. I was fortunate to, you know, pay my dues in high school and all three sports, and got recruited by Bob Charette, and he really solidified after he saw me play two basketball games. He goes, okay, he's athletic enough, and da da da. And even though I was on a smaller stature, he felt it was worth the gamble.
He is Sonny Sixkiller. He's going to be King Neptune for Seafair this summer. Sonny, it's great to hear from you. We really appreciate you joining us.
Hey, you guys, I always appreciate talking to you guys. You guys do a great job. I tune in whenever I can. And keep doing what you're doing. You're doing good stuff.
Well, thanks, Sonny.
We're really grateful for that, Sonny. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
for the
Sonny.
Nice
made
words.
My day.
And congrats.
All right,
to
man. Take care of you guys.
All right. Sonny Sixkiller there. It's the happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distillings, BSB, their brown sugar bourbon. Up next, we're going to sweep the dial, and that includes Baker Mayfield. Actually, very, very impressive, making me rethink whether or not he's going to be an absolute bust. Hear why next.
For FDIC. sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Rockets hit save. Caballero. Kovacic onside. Rockets hit. Empty net. Croatia running away from Argentina.
What a goal. And what a performance.
Argentina, the disappointment of my World Cup fantasy league, Dave.
Tell me about it, Danny.
They were my number one overall pick, a group of seven high school friends. I drafted them number one overall. They tied, a huge disappointment in their first match against Iceland.
So did you guys draw numbers and you got, it was like a draft, basically?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you pick it based on team colors?
No, I picked it based on the team I wanted to root for most. I didn't want to root for the Germans. That's insufferable. Like, I definitely didn't want to root for Brazil because they were too much of a favorite. I decided Argentina was nice. There's,
why not the Germans?
I don't like, they play joyless soccer, Dave.
They bombed Pearl Harbor, you know.
That's another reason. That
here come the pitchforks on
always,
the text.
Always yeah, sticks text in my craw.
Bunch of ingrates, don't know culture like we do.
Yeah, that's right. Animal House, fools.
Animal House.
Watch it.
Is that it? That's all we got on soccer?
You know what? You want my insight on soccer?
Yeah, I would.
Well, that's why I'm staying silent.
So,
I don't have anything.
That doesn't stop you in other instances.
I want to watch the World Cup, though. I really want, I want to go to that Brazilian restaurant that's in the North End and drink Brazilian drinks with Brazilian
Sambuca?
People. It was really fun at 6 in the morning. Yeah, people were hammered by 7:30. They were having a good time until the Netherlands won, and then there were tears flowing.
Oh, is that right?
Don't you always like it when adults cry over the result of a sporting event like that, though?
They were crying.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And I saw this, and I'm like, oh, Baker. You're playing Ohio State. I watched every snap. You were, you know, gloriously talented guy, right? And then I see this play right here. Now watch this, Baker. And you throw a touchdown. And instead of, I don't like this. I'm going to tell you right now. How come you're not, what? Where are you going? Where are you going over there?
Our band is over there. Our student section's right there. And then straight back to our sideline.
What about your team?
Did you watch the rest of the game?
I watched the whole game.
You did? So you saw me celebrate with my teammates like the three touchdowns before that, too?
I don't like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You pulled the one clip of me running right there to our fans and people that traveled well to that game, first of all. And then you didn't show the rest of the clip of me going to our sideline.
Calling out Colin Cowherd.
Take
Baker
that.
Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield, Dave, you put it, stood tall in the pocket.
I'll tell you what, I know you guys were all impressed as well. I just think that the maturity there and under pressure, I mean, here it is. Look, growing up as an athlete, you know who Colin Cowherd is, and you're going on his show. He was there live, and he didn't hide from him, and he's right. He did. He ran over to where all the Oklahoma boosters were. Look, this kind of stuff matters. This stuff matters in the NFL. Now, it's not going to help him throw touchdowns and things like that, but you face a lot of adversity. You come off the top of the heap from college, and then you go into the NFL, and you get your butt kicked. And you have lots of failings and things like that, and it's how you handle that stuff. And I'm really disappointed to see that Jameis Winston is still being kind of a, you know, and hopefully he's cleaner. I really like Jameis Winston, and I want to like him, but he's a jackass, and he needs to cut that part of his life out. And so as soon as Baker Mayfield, because he's had some jackassery in his background as well, and we saw him get tackled by the cops, and he had some stuff, but I don't know, that response and the way he handled that very calmly and maturely, that means something.
It made me question my prediction because I think he's going to be a huge bust. I think he's not going to ever lead Cleveland to a successful season. I don't think he'll start in the playoffs for him unless he's replacing somebody else that gets him to the playoffs. The way he handled it, which was he didn't get mad and he didn't throw a fit, he put Colin Cowherd in his place.
Mm-hmm. What kind of a comeback did Cowherd have? Did you hear the rest of it?
Yeah, I've listened to the whole clip, and he didn't have much of one. He was talking about, hey, you danced away from it, and then they played the clip of him getting tackled by the cop. And in both cases, I thought Baker Mayfield was awesome. I wonder what he's doing being interviewed by Colin Cowherd. Like, what at this point in his, why he needs to promote anything. But other than that part, I thought the way he handled the interview was about perfect.
I'll tell you what, though, if it was to go on and face up to those kinds of things and try to handle it well, I admire him for doing that because you could hide away from that stuff. A couple of great texts, one from the 206, both from the 206. Could be you were joking, but the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. Next 206. Get it right, Dave. It was the Canadians that bombed Pearl Harbor.
Now that sounds like a moron.
He injured himself taking off
his back.
Pants.
Throughout his back. Anybody? Bueller?
These skinny jeans are hard to get off.
Yeah, right. That is true.
The history of great baseball injuries is a fun one to go over. Ricky Henderson once fell asleep on an ice pack and missed a game with frostbite in August. It's probably my favorite one, but I mean, injured taking off his pants is a new one in the list.
I can tell you, as you get older, the things that injure you are surprisingly common.
This replaces Wade Boggs hurting himself taking off his cowboy boots. Understandable. Hurting yourself taking off your pants? Not.
What? Why would you admit that if it did happen? I had a couple of times where either I was toweling off or reaching back, and this is recent because, like you said, the older you get, the more where you pull like a muscle in your neck. I would never admit to that. You go out to practice, and then you do a couple things, and you go, oh, I hurt my neck in practice or your back.
Who was it that told us that? Was it Ryan Roland Smith?
Ryan Roland Smith.
He hurt himself using the steering wheel and waited until he got and threw a couple times. Then I was like, I think something's acting up in my arm.
Brandon Morrow.
Yeah.
Brings back memories, doesn't it?
Not really.
Morrow going back and forth, Tacoma, starter, reliever, closing for the Cubs. And he says it's frustrating. He feels stupid, but can't we relate to that? At least I can at 60. You know, trying to get my pants off sometimes is difficult.
Not a pro athlete.
Ew.
Well, he was standing up.
I don't like the
up.
Image of that.
No, if you're standing up. Sitting down, fine, but yeah, it's...
I don't even understand the logistics of how you would get hurt taking off your pants. Like, that makes no sense to me at all. How do you get hurt taking off your pants?
As you get older, it might make more sense. Although, Brandon Morrow, what's he now? Is he like 35 or something?
Yeah, and he's still a pro athlete.
I like that he admitted it.
That wraps up Sweepy the Dallas, brought to you by Specialty Insulation. It concludes our happy hour, which is brought to you by Heritage Distillings, BSB, their brown sugar bourbon. And don't forget, June 29th, you can join ESPN at CenturyLink Field for the inaugural Special Olympics Unified Sports Challenge. It's an opportunity to compete in things like hotshot basketball, golf, putting, teams of four, oversized darts. It's all in support of the 2018 Summer Olympics, Special Olympics, USA Games coming to Seattle. Learn more at UnderdogSeattle.com. Coming up next, the most intimidated I've ever been, and we put the Mariners' sweep at the hands of the Yankees in perspective. It's all ahead.